Okay, Ryan, here we are. Season four.
We
first
did it.
Episode ever.
Yep.
Who's our guest this week, Ryan?
David Frangiosa. You
That's
may remember
right.
him from the 13th episode, I think he said.
That's what he said, 13th
yep,
episode.
13th episode, one of our very first guests when we started getting into some more interviews about going gradeless. Was his topic, and we had been, he was a part of that series. It was so cool to have him back on today. He shared some, I like some of that deep insight as to now he's in year 8 of this process. And I think in the book he was in the 4 or 5 year range. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But he's said the process has evolved a lot for how he works with kids. The thing that stuck out to me the most, if you could summarize why you shouldn't do grades from his perspective, was grades are performance in relation to, and he's only comparing the child to where they were before, not to others. He's looking for growth among that individual. And I think that's pretty powerful for that student's individual learning. Yes, we do all like to compare ourselves to others, and maybe sometime that's a good reference point, but I think in the individual moments of coaching, I think that's a really powerful thought or a place to be in, as to where am I, just me, where am I compared to where I was before?
Well, one thing that I liked where he has progressed is he talks for a minute about how he's gone digital, and he uses a website called Got Learning. I don't know, I'm gonna have to do some looking, but he keeps digital portfolios with all the stuff. So when he has his conferences with his kids and they're talking about their progress, you just pull up that digital portfolio and everything's right there. So I think that's brilliant. And I also like to hear, and hopefully some of our listeners will want to take this step off the edge of the cliff, is that he is expanding his influence, and it is becoming contagious, and other people are starting to do it as well. So I think that's great that he's moving in that direction.
Title of his new book coming out, he said it was On Ramps to Education. I'm excited for that to come out and see. I think he said that's used to piggyback on what you're saying, is a how-to guide. I thought his first book was really a great how-to guide, but this sounds like it'll get a little bit more in-depth than the one before. Some more resources and pieces like that.
Absolutely. And speaking of resources, and I know, guys, when I refer to guys, I'm talking about you listeners, so gals too. Highlighting what Dave does, and you're talking about his next book coming out. He's got a website that is just amazing, and we're going to talk about that a little. Reimagined schools. And we're going to talk about that a little bit during the episode, just kind of giving you guys a preview of what's to come. But you do not want to get off before we start talking about that, because Dave's got, he's just so many resources. And what's cool about him is that he's not like getting paid for any of this. I mean, if you want to reach out to him on Twitter or X or whatever we want to call it these days and say, hey, man, I got some ideas about what's going on, he'll have a Zoom call with you and talk to you, because he's not in it for the money. He's in it to provide resources to help other educators grow. And that is really what this podcast is all about, is trying to expand. This is our professional development, and we hope our listeners are getting something out of this. But stick around for this episode. You're gonna get a lot of good information about going gradeless, and talk about some resources and ways that you can do that in your own classroom.
I'm pumped.
All right.
Get to the episode.
Hey, we're pumped. Everybody, what'd you call them? What are our listeners called?
Peg changers.
Peg changers. Peg changers. Enjoy the show. It's a fantastic talk, and we will see you next week. Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit.
Peg Doesn't Fit highlights change makers in education. I'm Ryan Bartle.
And I'm Eric Steven. Thanks for listening. We're hopeful you find value in your personal professional development journey through our content. Enjoy the show.
David Franjosa's back with us. This is exciting. The peg doesn't fit. You were one of our first, I believe, right?
I think I was one episode of the early 13. Guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
13.
Oh, you counted. You have counted.
Well, no. Okay. I remember because you did that whole grading series.
Yeah.
So started off Johanna with, was on ahead of me. And
what was the other guy's name? Corey
Henwood.
Yeah, yep. Corey Henwood from Utah.
The mastery stuff in Utah. Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of fun because you were our first series of interviews because we had first decided, why don't we just talk about 21st century learning? And that felt boring to us. And so
feel free to go back and listen to that, our listeners, because those have been our lowest listened to episodes, because clearly people come for the guests, not for us.
That's right. And that's why we're here today, because we've got the great one, the greatest from way out in New Jersey.
Hey, I just dropped the trailer today, too. And the trailer does say that we're going to try to have some former guests on. And I said, Dave, be looking for my email because you're coming. So check that out on the trailer. All right. So listen, last time we had you on here, you had just, I don't even think it'd been published yet, the book Going Gradeless. And we were really talking to you about, you know, what could education look like if we don't assign letter grades? Let's catch the listeners up because we talked a little bit off air, kind of about going gradeless, that whole idea of going gradeless versus SRG standards-based grading. So let's just kind of start and get our listeners caught up. What in the world is the difference between what you're doing with going gradeless and what the whole country is trying to jump on the bandwagon of standards-based grading?
Sure. So now, when people hear gradeless, they do get a little confused because at the end of a semester or the end of the year, I do have to provide a letter grade. But during the learning process, we never reference that grade. So what I do is more about interacting with the student on an individual level, and we're not comparing them to other things. We're not comparing them to standards. Yeah, we have clear learning targets, but I'm providing them descriptive narrative feedback that they can use to just improve in a series of practices, educational practices that are transferable to whatever they want to do. Because the reality is, it would be arrogant for me to think that I know what's next in their lives. So even though I teach physics, I use that as the vehicle in order to expose them to these transferable skills. And as long as they're leaving my classroom knowing more and being able to do more than they walked in with, I'm happy. Right. So when you talk about standards-based grading or standards reference grading, whether you call it SBG or SRG, or I know there's a bunch of different terms that people use for it, they're still looking at performance in relation to, right? So they're still comparing, right? This is the standard. This is what needs to be accomplished. And here's how well you did it. Where for me, I'm only comparing the student to their previous self.
Uh-huh.
Right? Are they improving from where they were before? And if they're not, what are some of the obstacles that are standing in their way, and how can I facilitate growth? And that's really the biggest difference. I could probably take up all of our time talking about the differences, but I think that's kind of it in a nutshell, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Now, last time we talked though, because one of the big hurdles with not grading is parents, you know, I mean, because everybody's grown up with ABCDF, right? How is that going? Like your journey before, I think you met when we first talked to you, you met with the parents ahead of time and kind of laid out what you were going to be doing and maybe had them sign contract. I don't know if you did that, but how has your communication with parents about how you're going to be assessing their children, how has that evolved since the last time we talked to you?
Well, technology has evolved, which made things way easier. I now have a platform that I'm using that kind of streamlines that feedback process and creates a digital portfolio as we go. So awesome. It's not as cumbersome to collect that learning evidence. And I'm still very proactive with my communication. I send out a welcome letter before school that tells parents where they can find all this information, how to interpret it. I send out progress reports after the first couple of units. I'm incorporating a lot more conferencing than I did before, like sitting down with the students, and we kind of co-create the grade. I do have a grade translation chart that's published. All of this stuff is published day one for students and parents. So a lot of that communication, I've kind of streamlined and I've made it more transparent and accessible. I took a lot of the onus on myself to just tell parents. Now it's all on my Canvas page where they can access it at any time. I'm using our student information system, which is Genesis. We have a bulk email feature, which I use to blast out progress reports and just updates about like when formal grades are coming, how to interpret those, kind of what we're doing. So, and then, like I said, the Got Learning is the platform that I'm using for student feedback, and that has been tremendous. I tried to do it with paper portfolios, like hard copies, and it just didn't do the same thing that the digital portfolio does. So now I have all that stuff in one spot where when I'm doing conferencing, we can look at a snapshot of all of the artifacts that students have collected in every different type of assignment that we're doing. So, we get a full snapshot of their entire body of work in one spot. And it just really makes the conversation more organic. And it really is about growth instead of comparison. So we can look at, something that they turned in the first 2 weeks of school, and then we can look at something from 2 months down the line and just say, hey, look at how much you've grown. And here were the mistakes that were happening in this submission, or things that maybe weren't as fleshed out. And look at how much better those got. And we're not having to click into multiple things. There are certain aspects of that we can share with the family so they can see that as well. So technology has really helped kind of streamline that process.
What does that look like in terms of, like, is it a scan of each of those, or when it's in the past, how are you reflecting back to that piece, or is it your rubric that you're looking at, or what does that look
so
like?
We don't really, even my progressions, we don't even discuss those learning targets. They're there that they refer to, and we use all of that for guidance, but labels are limiting, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't care if you're using 1, 2, 3, 4, if you're using 80, 90, 100, or if you're using beginning, developing, proficient. When you label, right, they identify with that label. So we're talking about the things that we're trying to accomplish within those categories. Yeah, they're there because we have to have them there just for, clerical stuff and just so I can communicate with my admin and guidance. But what happens is these can be digital submissions, whether it's a Word document, Google Doc, and then there's descriptive feedback on those. So I can annotate it. I have an iPad with an Apple Pencil, so I can annotate it. A lot of times we do print them out, and they're paper copies that the students will annotate. And we do whole class feedback where they're taking notes on it, and in that case, they would scan it in. So it's a whole bunch of different formats, but all of those different formats are still in one spot that I can see all in that conversation. So it really doesn't matter how they're comfortable providing that evidence. If they want to use Google Docs, great. If they like printing stuff out on paper and annotating it, great. Like, we can still collect all of that in one spot. So it really depends on the student. And that's really one of the things that I try and be conscious of, is making sure that the students are comfortable in the learning environment. However they want to engage with me and the class, I want to provide them a pathway to do that.
Now you're kind of living in one world and doing something else within that world, and then converting what you're doing back into the world the rest of us live in. And what I mean by that is that, and you mentioned at the beginning, I mean, it's hard to talk about going gradeless when in reality we still provide grades. Because that's what everybody's used to. So we have to keep the status quo so people are comfortable with those grades, yet they're getting them a different way in your class. So what does that look like? How does it come from, you know, first assignment in your portfolio to a letter grade at the end of the quarter?
Yeah, well, I don't think students should be punished for progress and the rate of progress. So for me, it's their most recent learning evidence. And I'm also incorporating another pathway as well. And we are doing, contracts. So that's something that I'm going to implement this year. There are certain habits, that, you know, have proven to help students be successful. And, you know, if they engage in those habits, throughout the whole year, regardless of where they end up in that grade translation chart, you know, it's a grade contract. I will honor that as long as they're working towards and they're doing their best work. But students who don't want to engage in that, we have the grade translation chart. So here at the beginning of each unit, we say what the target is. Our grade translation chart clearly states if you're on target in all of these skills, right? And that's it. Not proficient, not advanced, not developing. It just says on target. So if you're on target with all the skills, it's an A. If you're within one level of the target, it's a B. Right. So, and then, like, you know, it fluctuates from there, because we still have to give pluses and minuses. So I have to have a determination for all of those. But what winds up happening is I have a conference with students. And we look at all the learning evidence, we look at their progress, and then we agree on a grade. It's not me telling them this is what you got. It's us agreeing that, okay, this is what the evidence suggests. And then if they don't agree with that, they can make an argument for why it should be higher. Now, I do that before the final unit of the year. So the final unit of the year, now we have this conference. They know where they're at as they enter that last unit, and then they can practice the things that they need. So the final is not an I gotcha. It's their last attempt to improve. It can't hurt them. So it's their last chance to show that they've improved a skill or learned more, or, you know, and however they want to do that. And, you know, we're very specific in the feedback that we give. And I'm checking in with them and giving them helpful hints and whatever. And, so when I used to do it, the final was kind of an, I gotcha, you know, cause I still had that mentality of students shouldn't be punished. And theoretically their final submission should be their best work. And that provided a lot of stress. This way we've kind of reduced that stress. And it's just like, okay, I know what my floor is. If I do better on the final, I go up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like over time, first of all, one question, what year are you in this now? I think when your book was written, you were finishing third year of trying this. Is that right?
I'm in year eight.
Year eight of this process.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot has changed. Even since the book, a lot has changed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That's why we're waiting for your sequel.
Yeah. Hold on with that segue, though.
Okay.
My thought is, I assume that you alluded to this in your book, but I wonder if it's still the case, that student engagement is higher, and investment. And also a side question is, does behavior go down too? Like, is there less resistance in that way to, I mean, maybe they're goofing off or something, but does the, I guess the battle of you must learn this, that kind of teacher student battle, has that gone away from you for you?
Yeah. So now I will preface this by saying that since we shifted back to full in-person learning coming off of COVID, everybody is seeing kind of a lag in that that responsiveness from students. You know, and I don't necessarily think they're wrong for not engaging with school the way that they had in the past. All right.
Yeah.
They realize that there's a lot of inefficiencies in the way school is done, and they're not willing to take it anymore. I teach high school kids, mm-hmm. right? If it was good enough for them to do it this way for 2 years, why now do they have to go back to, you know, right? So there's a lot of things that aren't working for them. Now, I've had very honest conversations. So my relationship with students is no longer adversarial. It's more, I'm more like a coach or a mentor, right? Mm-hmm. And I can have hard conversations that some of these students, you know, aren't willing to engage with other teachers in. So, it, like, yeah, I don't see the same behavior challenges that some other teachers are seeing, but I'm also dealing with students on a much different level. Because for me, I've shifted my mindset. It's no longer about what I want from students. It's about what they need from me and what I can provide to help them be the most successful they can be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I authentically believe that, and they can see when you're genuine.
Right. Do you have co-teachers that have jumped on the bandwagon? And
hey, that's what I was going to ask. Cause you were like a
spreading the love
the last time we talked to you.
Yeah. So there's definitely more teachers who are shifting away from traditional grading. Not necessarily doing the exact same thing that I'm doing, but understanding the limitations of traditional grading and moving to more progressive approaches that are student-centered and, you know, looking towards being more equitable and just really valuing student experience.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I like, you know, listening to you, it seems like the focus is the learning. And not so much the teaching, right? And by you saying, you know, you want to be able to give what the kids need from you versus what I've got to give the kids. And that it makes me happy because, you know, we've talked about the visible learning people here on the past on our show. And we've really talked about Hattie and what are some solid teaching strategies and whatnot. So it affirms me to listen to you talk about how the goal is the student learning, because so often as teachers, we're so focused on what we're going to do. And really, that's when we go home tired at the end of the day, whereas the kids are the ones that are supposed to go home tired at the end of the day, not us.
Well, look, you still go home tired at the end of the day, but not mentally exhausted.
Correct.
Right. But here's the thing. How many times have we been asked, when will I ever use this? Right?
Yes.
And if the answer is in another class that they don't care about either, they're not going to engage.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, I teach physics, and I teach physics to students that don't want to take physics. They have to.
Yeah.
And so I get asked that question all the time. And I said, look, never. You're never going to need to know how to calculate the acceleration of, you know, a rolling object. Like, it's, you're not going to do that in your everyday life.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're not going to. What's that?
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Look, anything that you need in your job, you'll have a reference sheet for. Scientists have reference sheets. Right. So having us, like having students memorize certain things, or like, it just seemed pointless to me. But what I said is, you're going to need to critically think. You're going to need to solve problems. You're going to need to communicate, right? You're going to need to communicate effectively. So those are the transferable skills that we're teaching through physics. So those are the things that I care about. And in the progressions that we've designed, those are the things that are front and center. I forget who said it, but somebody said, you know, what you grade is what you value, right? And it's the truth. So here we're putting those things as the most important criteria. Those are the things that we talk about daily. That's the language that we use when we interact with each other. When students interact with each other, we do a lot of group work, a lot of collaboration, a lot of peer feedback. So I'm trying to give them a vocabulary, not around physics, but around communication and progress and, you know, just learning how to collaborate and interact with each other.
Well, and you've alluded to that in the past about the skills. You know, you're teaching skills, and the skill that you learn here in this particular section of our physics unit, you're going to need to use those same skills in a different type of physics unit. But it's the organizational skills, it's the study skills, it's the thinking skills, it's all these different skills that you're teaching how to be a better human being than how to be a physicist.
Yep. Yeah, and like a lot of times with my students, I say, look, let's just say you get into an argument with your brother or your sister, right? You want to create an argument that they can't beat, right? So you need to figure out, you know, what's the problem? What information do you have? And how can you construct that in a way that's irrefutable,
yep. right?
And we can do that through physics language, and then you can translate that and argue with your brother and sister and take them off because they'll never be able to win an argument with you. You know, I mean, communication is communication. It doesn't matter where you do it. Right. Yeah. And when we stop compartmentalizing, this is what we do in science. This is what we do in math, history, English. Learning is learning. Right. How we communicate is how we communicate. It's not different, but we make kids think that there are these like, seven distinct periods in the day that each does their own thing. And, you know, we've created this system where they don't see the connection. And I'm trying to get back to them seeing that through line that says, oh, wait a second, this isn't different.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's a process. It takes practice. It takes time. And I think it would be more successful if there were more people doing things this way. But, you know, when you talk about culture of a school, the culture of the school is around grades and comparing, where the culture of the classroom is about progress and skills. So, you know, it's hard to fight that. Like, they know walking into my classroom, that's what I value. That's what the culture is. All right. But they say it would just be so much easier if I did things like everybody else, because I'm the only one who's doing it this way, even though they value it.
Right.
I thought sometimes, didn't you allude to in the book, like when the kids made a switch, though, they tended to prefer your method and
yeah.
put up less of that resistance.
Well, even the ones that say they would prefer that I did things the same way, they still say, I like this better. It would just be mm-hmm. easier for me if I didn't have to switch my mindset for one period.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
all right. Sense. It's not that they prefer the other system. It's just that, like, all right, so for six periods a day, I'm doing this, but for one period a day, right. like the grade doesn't matter and I don't have to track my points. And like, you know, and for some people that's nerve wracking. And, you know, I realize that, and, you know, coming to that realization has caused me to provide a little more guidance and to do those grading conferences and to do things earlier. So nothing's a surprise. So we do have things in place because, you know, it's legitimate. Like, that's what they're used to. That's what's been ingrained in them. And when you rip the rug out from under them, for some people, you know, they get anxious.
Well, and I'm sure they really appreciate the feedback. You know, I mean, obviously providing feedback is a high yield strategy. I don't know what the Hattie effect size of it is, but I know it's really high. But that's the goal for all teachers, is to provide feedback, right? You do an assignment, you get it back, you see how you did. But it sounds like the feedback that you're providing, I can almost see kids like looking forward to getting their work back so they could see what you said about it and how they could change it. You know what I mean?
Well, so... Yep, we do all asset-based, so there's no deficit language used in the classroom. So it's not about what you didn't do, it's about what you did well and how we can take that and grow from there, all right? The other thing is when you talk about self-evaluation and peer evaluation, right, that's where you get the biggest effect size, is where they're actually evaluating their own work.
Absolutely. Right?
So the problem is, We know that, but we haven't provided them a system to where they could realistically look at it. Like, if they knew what they did incorrectly, they wouldn't have done it incorrectly the first time. So we need to give them some kind of framework, some kind of language where they can do that self-assessment. Right. And that's where those progressions come in, and it takes time. Right. And so if you're sitting here saying my content is important, and it is, right? Content is important. I do not dispute that. But like, if you're saying I need to get through all of this content because it's important, right? Then you miss that piece where you take the time to provide them the space to learn those skills.
Yeah.
Right. And you can't have both. Something has to give. It's opportunities cost. Right. And so I've made the decision where I would choose to prioritize, you know, gaining those, you know, those skills of self-evaluation, self-reflection, and I'm taking time out of my classroom. That doesn't mean that I'm diminishing content. It just means that, you know, we're going about it in a different way. And if it means that I don't get to the depth that I would if I was just force feeding them, you know, content, like I've made some decisions where I think that this specific content isn't as important as the skill. So, you know, if they need it, they'll get it later. And those are choices that we make as educators.
You have me dreaming of a world where we'd also go evaluationless instead of just gradeless. Because I've been thinking about teacher evaluations and how cool could that be if that was how they were done. And I'm trying to do that right now, but I think I'm just creating something on the fly.
Yeah, well, so we use the Kim Marshall model. And
I have not
Kim
heard
Marshall.
Of that.
Yeah.
Kim or Ken?
Kim. And pretty much what happens is we have six unannounced observations, and there's a narrative after each. Mm. There's no scores. And then at the mid-year, we each fill out a rubric, my supervisor and myself, and then we discuss it. And it's kind of the same thing that I'm doing with the students.
Yeah.
So
I bet teachers really appreciate the feedback from administration.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a great model. You know, we're having conversations and, you know, they're not seeing the whole lesson. And so they have questions about, okay, what happened before? What happened after I left? And, you know, you just discuss it. It's really the same model that I'm using with my students.
Yeah.
So it is out there, you know. Once again, not perfect. Okay. Nothing is.
Sure.
Sure. Well, we alluded to, but I said, hold that segue. And we've held our bladders for a while, so to speak. It is time. Tell us about some other projects you got going on. What's out
so, there? We tried to create a resource for people who were looking to go in this direction. So since the last time I was on the podcast, we do have, when I say we, I'm talking about Elise, my co-author as well.
Yeah.
We have a website, reimagineschools.com, and that has podcasts and blogs. Actually, there's a link to the Peg Doesn't Fit.
So I remember the first episode asking you about that, and you sure to your word put it up
of
there.
Of course.
And we appreciate it.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on. Like, you wanted to talk to me before anybody else, before the book was even published. So yeah, there we have courses that will help people develop their own progressions. So the website, we just went through a redesign, I think about 6 months ago. So really proud of the way it looks now and the functionality of it. My other project, it's a big project that I have a couple of people that I'm collaborating with, and it's really talking about those kids, you know, the ones that school doesn't work for. Over the course of this journey, I realized that there's no quick fix. There's not one thing. I started by digging into assessment, and that kind of led me down the road of understanding executive functioning, the impact of emotions on learning, you know, SEL, all of the challenges with equity, you know, the school to prison pipeline. So this next project is I'm partnering with experts in all those different fields. And they're writing the research on all of those different aspects of education, and I'm going to write the practical classroom applications, the day-to-day. So right now the working title is On Ramps to Education. It's, like I said, it's a big project. I don't know when it'll be released, but I'm very excited about the people that I do have involved. They are experts in the field, and you know, I am ecstatic that they agreed to work with me.
Well, I'm not gonna lie, Dave, I just went to your website and I'm kind of looking at it right now, and you're not lying. You have put together a nice I mean, if I didn't know you, I couldn't believe that you did it, because this, it's really nice. Well done on the website, and I'm hoping that you'll get some people to go check it out, because you've got resources, you've got the courses, you've got upcoming events, and even a way to contact you, which brings me to our next point. So if we've got any listeners that really want to go down this path, you know, how can they get in touch with you? Is going to the website the best way?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm on Twitter as long as that's around.
It's X.
I'm sorry, X. I'm on X. I'm still going to call it Twitter. As long as that's around. But yeah, through the website, you can email us. It has links to all the social media. So reach out to me, Elise. We're happy to help whoever. I do Zoom calls all the time. And like I said, I'm a practitioner. I'm in the classroom. This is not my job. This, like, I'm not making money off of any of this. I'm trying to provide free resources, because that's something that I didn't have when I tried to go this way. And so, like, we're trying to provide as much value as we can. There's some things on there that are behind a paywall, just because contractually with the book, we had to put them there. Yeah. But other than that, like, the majority of the resources there are free.
Yeah. And you got a blog here that's just endless posts that has a lot of really great information. So go to his website. It is reimagineschools.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. It is. But there's a D at the end of reimagined.
Yes. Reimagined.
I just typed reimagine and it got blocked by my school's filter. And I was like, what?
Don't do that. We don't want to get anybody
blocked, but
we don't want to get anybody reported. Well, listen, Dave, thank you so much for coming on. We really, as always, I mean, I don't think we have another guest that we've plugged more than you. Maybe Johanna. True. I mean, you guys were our favorite guests. Don't get me wrong. We've had a lot of really quality guests, but, you know, I feel like this connection almost, you know, great thing about this show. I mean, you're in Jersey. I've never met you, but I consider you my friend. And I appreciate you coming on. It's always great to talk to you. And we need to do this. We need to do this more often. Maybe even get you to come on as like a guest host.
I would love it.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That's amazing. Any closing thoughts, Ryan?
You said it well. I think, yeah, you said everything I wanted to say. I do feel... Yeah, this connection to you, I think because we had connected early on, and it feels like I've listened to your podcast as well. And it's like just this familiar voice. It does feel like, yeah, I consider you a friend, and it's pretty cool.